Sometimes the fun begins when the paved road ends. Chevy Silverado 2500 HD is made to work hard and play hard on the road or off. Go to ChevyDriveChicago.com for details and experience life in HD.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to Paul Listening Behind the Curtain, my opportunity to step away from the worlds of law and politics you watch me cover on television every day into the world of arts and theater. And this show is especially one I'm excited to talk about because, well, I've been playing piano since the age of seven, like perhaps so many of you who are watching or listening to this right now, except I didn't end up where my two guests ended up in terms of the skills and the talent. You'll understand what I'm talking about in just a moment as we meet the cast and director for Two Pianos, Four Hands, extended through August 11th and playing at the North Shore Center for Performing Arts up in Skokie, where I grew up. This was like bringing back good memories and all sorts of things when I went up there, only a few blocks from where I grew up. Joining me are, well, we'll just introduce the director first because you're just so well known here in the area, Rob Lindley. Not only director, you are a performer as well. You've directed and performed at Northlight. You did Lady Day at Porchlight. I remember that and How to Succeed, one of my favorite shows. Just, and I guess I will plug this. I'm not sure when this will go up in terms of it, but Mancini at 100, celebrating Henry Mancini's 100th birthday at Ravinia. On August, what day is that? August 4th?
August 4th. Sunday, August 4th. Yes.
And you've got a bunch of people that with no experience performing in it. Norm Lewis, Karen Mason, Jesse Mueller. Too bad you couldn't get anybody with some theatrical experience.
No Tony Awards in sight.
No Tony Awards in sight.
Real hacks.
that is just amazing. But of course, Adam and Matt are going, okay, let's not talk about that. So let me introduce the stars of Two Pianos, Four Hands. One is my old friend, Adam LaSalle. And I say old friend, Adam, because we go back to Spamilton.
We do.
And those days, I thought you were magnificent on the piano then. Boy, did I have a lot to learn now that I see you now. And now you've moved to New York. I'll consider you Chicago's very own anyway, if you don't mind.
Yes.
All right. And you played the role of Ted Dykstra in this. I'm going to get to that in just a minute. And Matthew McGloin, and you go by Matt. So you play Richard Greenblatt. You are also, both of you are actors, you're musicians. And Matt, I'm going to start with you. You've done this seven different iterations of this because, Adam, this is your first, right?
Yes.
So, Matt, how does Adam compare to the other? No, I'm kidding. This is one of those deep and insightful interviews where we get right down to the nitty gritty.
Oh, yeah.
Actually, I'm going to go start with Rob. Rob, tell me a little bit about what this show is all about, because even though we know your names are, your characters are Ted and Richard, these are real guys and this is their life.
It was created by the real Ted and Richard, and they put this show together because they realized they were both working actors in Canada who happened to have unbelievably advanced piano skills, and their journey to become artists were similar in so many ways. So they created this show. It's a runaway hit. I would put it right underneath Come From Away as like the greatest theatrical export from Canada. It has run for almost 30 years off and on in Canada and around the globe. It's a real crowd pleaser that it really tells the story from like baby's first piano lesson to aspirational dreams and adjusting those dreams to be a concert pianist. And it speaks to a lot of people, whether piano was your thing or not, because of the discipline any given art form takes. And it's not, I guess not even artists have to, you don't have to be an artist to get this. But it has a lot to say, and it becomes very personal. So even though it was written about these two guys, they're really everyman. And so you can find the relationship and find the joy and find the pathos and the humor, no matter who's playing them.
I'm glad you just said that, too, because, look, what attracted me first, the piano, the music, I mean, that's what attracted me. That's what I saw in terms of the graphics and everything else. And then you're right. You sit through the show and you're going, oh, no, this is about growing up. This is about parental pressures. This is about so many different things that it's just amazing to sit through. So, Matt, you might have a yes to this, Anna. You played this for so long because the real Ted and Richard played this for 30 years themselves, so number one, did you ever see them do it? Because they were doing it into the 2000s. But number two, have you met either of them? Have they watched you play them?
So no, I have not seen Ted and Richard actually perform it, but I have met Ted. Yeah, he came to see a show. I did a production at the Mayfield Theater in Edmonton, which is actually Ted's hometown. So it's pretty cool to get to meet him after the show. We had asked, if they're going to come see us, please don't tell us until it's over. And he was lovely. He was gracious and kind, and seemed to really trust us with the story. And that meant a lot, because it's rare to be playing someone who's still alive and then is sitting in the audience seeing you tell their story, even though it's not just their story, which is what I think is great about this play. It becomes very personal.
By the way, out of curiosity, so what kind of, I'm sure he gave you wonderful feedback because you're incredible in the show, but does he sort of, did you tap into him? Is this Ted as Matt plays him? Or did he say, you've captured me?
Well, I actually did not. I don't play Ted, so I play Richard.
I'm sorry, that was an Adam question. Yeah, that's right.
That's okay. So, no, it's quite all right. We are interchangeable. but I will say that I have not met Richard, but I have heard some wonderful things about who he is as a human by way of the director who has previously directed me, who knows both Ted and Richard personally.
Okay, good. And I'm sorry, that was my bad, because I know who's playing who here. So Adam, as you play Ted, you know, look, you've done lots of different roles, and you were recently in Beautiful up at Marriott. So we're always getting to you know, take advantage of your variety of skills. But I don't know that I've never seen you play a role which relies so much on your piano skills and your playing ability. Are you loving this? Are you loving the challenge that gives you?
Yes, I'm going to frame that in a very specific way, because this show. And I, first of all, want to say thank you for your kind words earlier about me and Spamilton. That was, to compare that, I got to play show tunes for that entire kind of show, which is something that I grew up playing and I love playing. But to play music at this level and how much is asked of each musician in the show it's an extraordinary challenge. And I mean that word in every way. I mean, it's extraordinary in the sense that to be able to have a career in which you're able to play this music, to prepare with this music, is an extraordinary gift. But then also what is asked of us to learn this music is like nothing I've ever been through in my life. And so I think every day that there is a slight panic attack that goes through me before that 8.5 minute Bach concerto. But Matt has been an extraordinary partner throughout all of this. I can't thank him enough. He supports me on stage. And so, yes, it is a challenge, but it is a challenge like I have never had before. And I am so fortunate to be able to say that is my job right now. It is the greatest creative challenge I've ever had.
And Robin, we'll get back to you in a minute, but I love doing these interviews because I get to ask things that I wondered about. So Matt, during that, the latter part of the show, we get the long concerto. It looked to me like you're almost doing a little conducting, whatever that word would be, because I saw facial cues that looked like they were going from you to Adam, but I couldn't tell if they were just loving nods or whether you were just, you know, whether you were like keeping something going music wise. Are you sending him certain musical information cues?
I think the correct answer is all of the above. So this piece is just a beast. It's an honor to play it, and it is so difficult. I compare it to a gymnast doing a tumbling pass, who, if something is slightly off, you can make a big mistake and have to quickly counter. And I think that's a big part of the piece, is not just the piece itself. It's how you, as an artist and a human and a musician and a pianist and an actor, counter when you make a mistake. That is a big part of the artistry. I feel like I can really say that after having done it so many times. When I'm stepping into this show with Adam in this production, there's a sense of taking care of him. And I think I can say that, because I don't think that's anything that he wouldn't know or that Rob doesn't know, that this show, it's just quite an undertaking. So I believe that what you are seeing is part of me guiding Adam as I can but he's also, he's got it, and he's making the buck his own, and then it becomes ours. And so, yes, at times I'm like, we're still both learning the music together.
Wow.
But 98% of it, 99.5 is already done of that. So then there is a give and take. It is a scene. That's what I was originally taught with this show. The Bach is a scene. We are scene partners working together on this piece of music. So I think that's a lot of what you're seeing.
I'm glad I noticed that. I remember, Adam, when I was young and they made me do recitals, and I remember playing a Chopin piece and I forgot how it ended. And so you're in front of this audience, and I like got to a point where then it goes back for a repeat, and I kept repeating it because I couldn't get out of it. And then finally I just had to just fade off because there was no hope. So Matt talks about if there's a mistake or whatever, I'm sure that audience at one point was going, is this kid ever going to be done? But the other question I had, Adam, before I get to Rob, is I also noticed that various times the two of you, you'd kind of pull music out, you'd put it on the piano, but you never opened it. Well, maybe sometimes you opened it, but I sort of wondered, well, like, is it a prop? Not that it wasn't real, but is it a prop, or is it there because you might have to use it? I was just curious about that.
Yeah,
it was memorized.
Yeah, anytime we've actually used a prop, I think with the exception of only one song that is, or two that are used in the scene, they are the music that we are playing. And so a lot of the show is memorized, and so we don't always need that. But yeah, so if you were looking at the music, it should be, at least if I pulled out the right music, that is what we are playing. And so only a few times sprinkled throughout the show am I actually playing what's written. But most nights, I'm grateful to say, it's usually here and it's usually working.
But and if you pull it out and you don't open it, and if you pull it out because you think you might need it or something like that, then technically a moment could come where you're going to open it and get to where you want to be.
I suppose. I hadn't really thought about that. I've tried to do it, and we have a wonderful props person, Nick. I can't think of his last name right now, but Nick is wonderful at Northlight Theater. And so what's great is that because we move through so many different props, they are labeled in such a way that they're easy to open and they're easy to kind of navigate, so that we can quickly pull it out of our piano bench, throw it on the stand, and quickly start playing it. And so hopefully it is turned to the right page. I have yet to, knock on wood, pull out the wrong piece of music and start playing it. So hopefully for the rest of the run, I won't do that.
Not that we would know, but yeah, not the audience. So Rob, when I interviewed Joe Mantello for the Steppenwolf show, I asked him, I said, the script itself with regard to the set says the set is a couch in a void. And I asked him whether or not that's good news as a director or troublesome news. I'll tell you what he said in a minute, but I will ask you sort of the same question, because while I have not read this script, I'm guessing it basically said two pianos and a stage. So as a director, do you look at that and say, oh, darn, I got to come up with stuff? Or do you look and go, I love that that's my set?
Listen, I told everyone on the production team about a year ago when we started having meetings about design, I said, everything we need to know is in the title. I need two pianos and I need four hands. That's it. One of my greatest mentors in town is Charlie Newell, who is at Court Theater. I've had the pleasure of doing, 8 or 9 shows with him. And I always consider my time with Charlie to be like my grad school. And Charlie likes a clean set. And if there's going to be chaos on the set, it's going to be on purpose. So the only real challenge was to keep things clean. So you'll notice that it is stark. It's meant to look like a recital hall. It's meant to let the guys and the music be the stars, to let everything else happen there. Anything else that we needed to come quickly and go away quickly, or like by the end of Act One, there's a moment of chaos where sheet music kind of gets scattered everywhere and a metronome is still on stage. And I said to the guys, that's fine. We can always let things bloom and let some chaos happen, and then we'll reset. And the show ends as clean as it begins, with kind of feeling like you've gone back in time.
Yeah, absolutely. And, if there's any question, when Sean Hayes was doing Goodnight Oscar, A lot of people wondered because of the direction they had the piano. Well, is it a player piano? And of course, if you all know Sean, or any of you know Sean, he plays. He's a
Very
concert
well.
pianist. So no, that was him. He was playing. Although I did ask, what happened if Sean missed a night? And the answer was they did. The piano was a player piano. So if it had to be, because the understudy did not have Sean's skill in doing that. Do you guys have understudies in the show? Matt? No. So we need you. If you're okay with me playing Big Chief Thundercloud, I can step in for one of you
You're hired.
and show tunes.
Great.
Perfect.
That's what that's what I've got. So man, how about you? Because you too, when I look at your career description, you're an actor, you're a musician. Are you an actor who's a, I get a feeling you're a musician who's also an actor.
Oh, I identify the other way around,
Okay.
actually. An actor who's a musician, but I was first a musician. Yeah. So,
And Adam, are you a musician who's an actor, or an actor who's a musician?
I have such trouble with this, if I'm being honest, only because it is so hard for me to delineate where one starts and the other ends. I like to see them as
That's
essentially.
because of the roles you take.
I mean, I am very fortunate that oftentimes if I'm in a show and I get to act, I do play an instrument of some kind. And so I love them both the same. It's like saying which child I love more. I mean, I just see them as just part of who I am. I wouldn't be able to do one without the other. And so I'm going to say it's a tie.
Fair enough. And Rob, in the casting of the show, I'm assuming you're instrumental in the casting of the show. I'm curious, did you sort of say, I heard about this Matt guy who's been playing this for years and 7 times, let's get him in?
A
And
little
or
bit,
maybe
yeah.
you had personal experience with Adam in the past. So talk about sort of how did these guys come in and get the role? I think I can figure it out, but
Yeah, if it's a little bit of those things. The skill set for this, and we keep talking about the music. Sometimes this show gets marketed in a way that makes you feel like it's like Howl at the Moon piano bar music. It's not. It is
oh,
Beethoven,
no.
Bach, Chopin, Mozart, with a little pop music sprinkled in just when the
Well, there
audience.
is a piano bar scene.
There is, yes, but probably not favorable as far as piano bars go.
Now, having played piano bars for a while, it was a nightmare to watch, but go ahead.
Exactly. The fishbowl trauma that we put in there is personal experience from Rob Lindley being put on stage. But the skill set that you have to do this show, because they're not just playing Ted and Richard, they're also playing upwards of 10 other people. And even within Ted and Richard, they're playing them from age 5 to age like 35. So the skill set you need for this show, there's a list of about 12 people in Northern America who can do it.
Wow,
So how it came to me, how these genius humans came to me, is that I had a friend I had done a show with who had done two pianos, four hands, and I knew from social media he had been doing it. So I reached out to him first. And he said, I can't do it because I'm, guess what, playing Jerry Lee Lewis somewhere, because he's one of those people who has the skill set. And he says, but you've got to meet the guy that I've been doing it with. And that was Matt. And so Matt and I had a long conversation via email about, like, it's going to be different. It's not going to be your same scene partner. It's not going to be the same direction. I'm going to want you to break some things that you had set. I'm also. We'll welcome all the knowledge that you bring too. We're not going to make you start all the way from scratch, but as an actor, I know what it's like to have a new scene partner put into a show and you feel like you're wearing someone else's shoes for a while. So Matt and I really had a moment of like, do you want to do this? Do we trust each other? Let's go. And then I happened to be out at the Marriott seeing that production of Beautiful. And I knew that the Carol was really playing piano because she and I toured together in Phantom. So I knew anyone touching that piano was really playing. And when one of the Righteous Brothers sat down and started playing the piano in one of the scenes, I was like, huh. And I looked at his bio, saw that he had been in Murder for Two. Murder for Two is another one of these shows that if you've done it, you can probably do this show. In fact, both of these gentlemen have been in Murder for Two. So I asked Adam to come in and audition, and he was amazing.
and there you are.
There it is. That's how we found each other. And I'm so grateful. I feel like with this show, they say that in directing, 75% of your work is casting. In this one, I would say it's probably closer to 90%. And they've
Well,
both
yeah.
been such great collaborators and trust me. And it was a really fantastic experience for
Well, when
me.
I first saw, I mean, I saw Adam, and I know you, I saw Adam's name in the, and so I was like, God, I have to see the show anyway, just because, to be honest, because you were in it. And I wanted to see that. Man, I didn't know you. Now I do. And now I will see anything you're in, because it is amazing. But I'm sort of curious. Let's talk about Rob like he's not here. So, Matt, I'll start with you. Is Rob, would you describe Rob as an actor? Because he's also an actor. So do you get that sense from other directors you've worked with in this show? Is he an actor's director?
Ooh, yeah. That's actually that is I think like a very apt description of like with Rob, because the time that we took to discuss certain really pivotal scenes in this show, especially like the relationships between we call them dad son one in the first act and dad son two in the second act, which are really important scenes and emotional scenes. To hearken to what Rob said about like I'm stepping in to do something new with this show, it's going to be a different experience with different people and different visions. That was especially where this was felt for me, was in those acting scenes. And it was, I think it was the first or second day of rehearsal when Rob, you were talking about arriving as our authentic selves into the story, which is not something that I have always felt with this show. So for Rob to extend that at an early stage of our rehearsal really was an amazing framing for me of how to relate to the show in a new way. And yes, I would say that in working with Rob, that the biggest change and shift for me was the acting, was the intention, was the authenticity.
So in the characters as you play them now, I'm not talking about, that you in the role of Richard, but in the characters, other characters that you play, if I had seen you in a different iteration of this show, would I be seeing the same performance or would I be saying, oh, wow, he's playing that really differently here?
I'm sure that there would be some similarities, but no, I'd say that there are specific moments in the show that are completely different.
Wow. And that's what acting's all about, right? And the fun. And
Yeah.
Adam, for you, so this was new, but I'm sort of curious in terms of I'm asking the same question, is Rob an actor's director? But you've got some dialects that come into play. You reminded me again the nightmare of my bar playing days with I don't want to give a lot away, but with the character you play in that scene, I never want to hear the song Piano Man again. So talk to me about but talk to me about those characters. Did he guide you in creating those characters? Were they based on people sort of in your world of life experience?
Yeah, so I'll kind of answer the second one first, in the sense that when I read this play, there were just certain teachers and people in my life that were just so clearly a part of this story. I really connect with the character that I play. He has a beautiful monologue at the end about kind of wrestling with who you are at the end or the perceived end of your kind of, creative journey. And so I very much pull from a well of my own family members, my own kooky teachers, my own just experiences in the arts. And so what I really appreciate about Rob is that he gave me the flexibility day one to just kind of say, here's what I'm bringing. Here's kind of the toolkit that I have. And was very, to Matt's point, very supportive about making sure that it wasn't just Ted's story that we're bringing, but it's Adam's story as well. And so I just think that tied into everything that I really was able to bring such a sense of self into everything that I've been able to do in this show. And I think that's what's made it such a special experience is that I can really draw a direct line between my own experiences. And it really makes that kind of like theater magic happen for me, which I hope is reaching audiences. We do have people that are like writing to Matt and I saying that this reminds me of when I studied music, or I had a teacher just like that, or Paul, exactly what you're saying. Like I remember this in my own personal life, and so I think it's kind of been a magical combo of like the right people in the right place at the right time that are telling a story that people are really hearing and they're really getting. And so yes, I would say Rob is an actor's director.
What I took from that answer was you've been a drunk guy in the bar before.
Maybe once or twice, but we don't have to have that. We don't have to put that in the podcast.
All right, we'll edit that. And Rob, as you put this out, I was sort of curious as to the rehearsal process, maybe because this is not a matter of, okay, guys, we're going to do Inherit the Wind, so let's everybody get on stage and kind of put this together. The music becomes substitute. Do you sort of say, okay, for the next 2 weeks, I'm going to bring in you know, the pianist conductors or whatever it is, and you guys work on the music, and I'll see you in a week. Are you that guy? How did you separate the music preparation from then putting the whole show together? Or maybe it wasn't a distinction that needed to be made.
Well, first of all, we didn't have 2 weeks. Okay. These guys met each other on June 18th. And we started performances on July 5th. Ah. So we knew that Matt had the music in his fingers already. We met with Adam a month earlier and hired a piano coach for him to just run through the music. Let him, because when you look at the score, it feels like, you know, how do you eat an elephant? Well, one bite at a time, right? So that's what this score looks like when you look at it. And so we tried to give Adam as many tools as he could have to start breaking this down. But then we broke up rehearsals kind of like you would working on a musical theater piece, where you would maybe start your morning with a block of just working on music. And then there are some things that are really integral. There are scenes that literally have a metronome going underneath the whole scene, or a clown routine that is being played while you're doing Mozart, and you can't miss a note, and you have to slap someone on the and of four, you know. So sometimes it had to be all together, but we worked together as far as departments, Matt running the music department, me running the rest of it. But I understand music. I do a lot of musicals myself. So I was often there and could react and say, I think we'll get a better arrival if we do it like this. And just kind of everybody working together towards the same goal was how we approached it. And back to the part about like bringing your whole self, I will say I got to speak to Ted before we started this journey. They're very protective of this piece, and they should be, because you have to have the skills to do it. So they have casting approval over anyone who does it. And then I sat down and chatted with Ted, and he's like, you know, the trap that people fall into is they try to make this our story, and it's not. Please let whoever you cast, let it be their story. So it was even more of an invitation to be like, hey, don't worry about how Richard was in junior high, or what Richard's relationship with his dad was. I want to see what you would bring. So again, I'm glad that Matt brought up the dad scenes. And that's, again, me putting my fingerprints all over something. Two men trying to communicate with each other and just not quite making it happen is something that I'm very familiar with in my own life. So that's the part. Those are the scenes that make you sit there and go, oh my God. And I'm so happy with the result and the friendship that these two have off stage, that I think those musical cues you're seeing them give is meant to be like a metaphor for life. Like to be able to look at someone in the eyes and be like, are you ready? I got you. Let's go. Oh, that didn't go how we thought it was going to go. I still got you. Let's go. Let's do this. Yeah. That's the message of the show for me. It's like, we always get another pass at it. Nothing was a waste. Let's keep going. Let's keep doing our best.
Or it might have been, did you order the pizza yet?
That too. Yeah. Sometimes there's that. Is there going to be pizza backstage?
Which, by the way, having grown up in Skokie, there's a place called La Rosa's Pizza. If you like really thin pizza, even thinner than New York, do you know La Rosa? Does any of that mean anything to you? It's I think Dempster or something. Anyway, La Rosa's Pizza, grew up with it from age zero. It's still there. My brother drives from Buffalo Grove just to go get it. It's simple, it's plain, but I'll throw that out at you. And man, we just learned that actually the real Ted and Richard could have just nixed you.
Yeah.
Wow. Isn't that, or me. Or
yeah,
Adam.
No, but I mean, my good, but yeah, but they met him. I mean, wouldn't that be interesting if they could have said, oh, that Matt guy? No, I'm just totally kidding. So Adam, let's go beyond the music. And I keep focusing on the piano because it's just my background too and stuff. But we made such a big point about saying the show is much more. And the evening I was there, I mean, there were a lot of people looking around the room. I'm guessing a lot of them weren't pianists, concert pianists, but nevertheless, you know, nodding and reacting in so many ways. So for Adam, for you, what are the messages people can take from this show if you pull the piano playing out of it?
Oh, that's a great question. And I think there aren't many theatrical pieces that I think are really universally moving. And I think that it doesn't have to be piano. In this case, it happens to be around a piano and piano adjacent. but it is very much to me about what it means to kind of make sense of your life as a creative person or even just having creative interests. The idea of how scary a pursuit of a thing is, what it means to hit hurdles, what it means to reevaluate what that relationship to that thing is to you, how to battle imposter syndrome, what happens when you are told no of something that you care about. Like the list goes on and on. That it happens to be through piano, and I can't deny that if you are a pianist or a musician, like it'll probably hit home in a very acute way that I don't think many shows do. But I do think it's kind of got that like Sunday in the Park with George kind of aspect. Like it's a show about art. It talks about art. It talks about the creation of art and how you fit into it. But at the same time, even if you're not quote unquote an artist, I think if you're a person that thinks about who am I in this world? What am I doing? Is it really what I want to be doing? Am I good enough to make it? I thought I had the chops for it. Maybe I don't. I think I do. If you're someone, which I do think that's a universal human thing, I think if you have thought that, you'll get this show. And so what I really love is that people who have piano lessons get it. People who are non-musicians get it. We've had kids in the audience who seem to really get it. And I love that this important story that happens to be again with kind of piano at the center of it is not just about that. It really is a story about making sense of who you are throughout your life. And so I just.
Exactly. And I love your reference to Sunday in the Park, whatever. It's why Streisand said, Stephen, I want to use some of your lyrics. I'm changing them. And of course, Sondheim goes, go ahead. It's you, Streisand. Matt, what message beyond the piano do you take from the show? Having just listened to Adam, maybe he just tapped right into your own views.
I think that what Adam said is spot on and is beautiful. And if I were to lend anything more to it, it's that I think the reason why it is universal is because I believe that every single human, particularly at a young age, has a dream. I mean, it could be anything. I want to be a marine biologist. I want to be a zoologist. I want to be Magellan and discover new lands undiscovered. I want to be an actor. I want to, you know, these things that some people pursue. Sometimes it doesn't go the way you thought it would. Sometimes it does. And Rob wrote this. And Rob, I don't think I read your notes until later, until like even after we'd opened, about how it's about adjusting your dream, which is, ooh, it like stabs the use of that word, but it's real and it's true. And we have to, even when things are going well. So I think that's what makes this so compelling. I think it makes everyone go, oh, yeah, I had that dream and I went for it, or I didn't. Or now it's a hobby, or I decided to have a family. Like it's, and there's no failure in it. There's a success in having the dream, and this is one story of a way that unfolded. But I think it instantly makes people go,
I lecture high school
maybe,
students every
even
summer, and I
if
almost
I'm
tell them when I saw a college counselor, I said I was going to go be an accountant, and because I needed a job, you know. And she said, "I don't respect you. You know, you have to go for your passion." And now I teach that to, you know, to younger people, which is, you know, when you're young, you get a shot, go for your passion. If you fall on your face, you'll get up and go be an accountant if you want to, with all due respect to the accountants who are watching us. Rob, as I talk to your cast members, I really feel as though they're really reflecting back on your life views.
I mean, sure. Listen, I love directing so much. It's a chance to help everyone do their very best. And like I say, I don't you can't take directing is like hosting a really great dinner party. And a lot of times it's like, okay, well, who do I sit across from the other person? Because I know they will bounce off each other and I'm just going to host. And I know the recipes and I know how to make a great dish, but I'm going to get everybody else involved. And I want you to bring your
I
recipe
love that.
and bring your thing. And wow, thank you for bringing this bottle of wine. It goes perfectly with this person's dessert. That's how I feel directing. And, I've been lucky. Every single person who contributed to this show, every one of our brilliant designers, everyone at Northlight, everyone from the
It
from the top to the bottom.
It's a major team effort. I know. I don't mean to cut you off. We're going to get cut off. So I just want to remind people that Two Pianos, Four Hands is playing through August 11th at North Shore Center. Tickets at northflight.org. Don't miss it. It's been extended, but who knows for how long. That's maybe it, August 11th. Everybody, thank you for joining me. Break legs, as they say every night. Appreciate you.
Thank you, Paul.
Al, thank you so much.